Welcome back to the Collaborative Psychiatry Quick Take podcast series. I'm Dr. Daniel Suter, a psychiatrist trained in general and addiction psychiatry, and I created Collaborative Psychiatry to help make outpatient mental health care more practical, structured, and usable in real-world visits. These Quick Take episodes are short, focused discussions on topics that come up all the time in clinical practice, from medication decisions to diagnostic uncertainty, to the practical realities of delivering mental health care these days. This episode is a little bit different. Today, we're going to be talking about billing for mental health related visits. It may not sound like the most exciting topic, but it's an important one because confusion around billing can make this work feel more chaotic, less sustainable, and harder to do well. As always, due to the support of subscribers, this podcast remains free of commercial sponsorship. What you hear reflects my own clinical experience and interpretation of the literature. For full-length CME audio courses, more clinical tools, and downloadable resources, check out collaborative-psychiatry.org. The link will be in the podcast description. Let's get into the episode. So billing is always a complex subject, whether we're talking about general medical visits, mental health visits, or some combination of the two. In this episode, I want to walk through the broad strokes of billing for mental health in both primary care and general outpatient mental health settings. So whether you're a PCP, a psych NP, a PA, or some other mental health clinician. The good news is that the underlying approach is largely the same across disciplines. Toward the end of the episode, I'll talk briefly about psychotherapy add-on codes, which tend to be used more by mental health clinicians than by PCPs, though PCPs are not prohibited from using them if they're truly providing therapy. More on that later. What I think makes billing for mental health interventions feel a little bit more murky is that historically the billing code system was designed for the more objective, test-based medical model of care. In visits that focus on mental health, there are typically fewer labs, minimal exam, more talking, and more uncertainty. Many clinicians walk away from these visits thinking that sure felt like a lot of work, but I'm not sure how to capture it in the billing. This episode is not about how to scrape out higher bills, of course. It's about accurately capturing the work you do and reducing any anxiety that there might be about appropriate billing for that work. And again, most of this will apply if you're a PCP managing someone's depression, anxiety, or ADHD, or a psych NP doing longitudinal medication management, or even a psychiatrist. For a little bit of context, it's helpful to understand how billing has changed in the last decade or so. And that change was partially driven by a recognition of how the older model was failing to capture nuance, especially in mental health care. Outpatient billing used to revolve completely around physical exam components, review of system checklists, and problem counts, and the documentation had to prove the billing. That older model worked well for acute complaints, as well as lab and imaging-driven care. Mental health didn't fit as well because visits tend to be longer, more cognitive, counseling-heavy, and overall higher risk with fewer objective data points. Essentially, the more you talked and thought, the less the system captured your work. By the late 2010s, there was a growing recognition that this system was driving burdensome documentation and checkbox care while failing to recognize cognitive medical work. Major E&M outpatient reforms were finalized in 2019 and implemented in 2021. Notably, these changes were already underway before COVID, but COVID and the shift to telehealth and away from physical exams became the perfect real-world demonstration of why the changes were necessary. Okay, so with that context, outpatient visits today are billed in one of two primary ways: medical decision-making, or MDM, or time spent. The goal here was again to move away from problem count-based thinking, which had contributed to runaway problem lists and over-intervention. Now, PCPs, NPs, PAs, psychiatrists, and most of outpatient medicine use the same E&M framework. and it's one that better reflects the variety of cognitive, counseling, and management work involved in good care. I want to talk about MDM and time-based billing separately, and then discuss how each applies to mental health visits and which approach makes the most sense when. And I'll give you a simple way to think about this upfront. Most mental health visits fall into one of two buckets. Shorter, higher complexity visits where MDM tends to make the most sense, and longer, more counseling-heavy visits where time-based billing is often the cleaner and safer option. Now, when it comes to MDM, the idea here is to do billing 99213, 99214, or 99215 based on how hard the thinking was that went into the case. There are three elements that go into MDM, and you only need two of the three to determine the level. The first element is problems addressed. The more problems or conditions the patient has, the more complex the medical decision-making. Chronic conditions count here, and mental health conditions certainly count. New problems add additional complexity. But even a stable chronic condition such as major depressive disorder counts if you're actively managing it, and active management can include deciding not to change treatment after reviewing symptoms. The second element of MDM is data, which is often weaker in mental health. You're not typically ordering lots of labs or imaging, and that's okay. Reviewing labs that might be contributing to symptoms, scoring rating scales, getting outside records, or collateral information, those all count towards data. But mental health visits don't need robust data to qualify as complex. The third element of MDM is risk, and this is where mental health usually does the heavy lifting, and where underbilling often happens. Because risk isn't just hospitalization or emergencies, and that's where people tend to get this wrong. Starting or adjusting psychiatric medications is risk. Managing side effects is risk. Assessing suicide risk, even passive thoughts, counts. Prescribing or monitoring controlled substances like stimulants or benzodiazepines counts. Functional impairment affecting work, school, or parenting counts. Diagnostic uncertainty like ADHD versus anxiety or depression versus bipolar spectrum also counts. And one additional point, deciding not to escalate care is also a form of risk management. Thoughtful restraint counts too. Stability doesn't mean low complexity if you're actively managing medications or safety, and that's where a lot of underbilling tends to happen. So when you put this together with MDM, you can see why most mental health follow-up visits land at least moderate complexity. If you're managing a chronic condition like depression or ADHD, making medication decisions and thinking about safety, even if the patient looks stable, that's usually already enough to get you there. You're managing a chronic condition and holding real medication or safety risk, even if the patient looks stable and there are no labs involved. We put a more detailed MDM breakdown with mental health examples on the website, which is much easier to review visually than in audio, so be sure to check that out too. Now the second, and for mental health, often more straightforward approach is time-based billing. Here, you bill based on the total clinical time spent on the date of service. And that includes not just face-to-face time, but also, of course, chart review, counseling, documentation, and care coordination. Here, for established patients, 20 to 29 minutes gets you a 99213. 30 to 39 minutes gets you a 99214, and 40 to 54 minutes gets you a 99215. Talking counts, thinking counts, coordinating the plan counts. In mental health care, the talking is the work. It's how we gather information, assess risk, and build a plan. Time-based billing finally makes that visible. If you spend 10 minutes reviewing a chart, 25 minutes with a patient discussing depression or ADHD, and another 5 minutes documenting, that's 40 minutes easy, which is a 99215. You don't really need anything more complicated than that. When you factor in things like prior authorization, collateral calls, managing comorbid condition, time really adds up quickly here. And that's why time-based billing is often the easiest and safest option for mental health-heavy visits. I will say one quick nuance here. In specialty mental health settings, visits are often longer, which makes time-based billing a very natural and easy fit. In primary care, mental health management is often more compressed into shorter visits, but the cognitive complexity and risk can still be very high, which is where MDM often ends up being the better reflection of the work. Now, on top of the base E&M codes that we just discussed, there are a couple of add-on codes worth knowing about. The first is G2211, a Medicare add-on recognizing longitudinal relationship-based care. This code applies broadly to chronic conditions, including mental health. So if you're owning a patient's mental health care over time, right, depression, anxiety, ADHD, whatever it may be, you can add G2211 for Medicare patients. Some commercial payers recognize it, but many don't. So best practice here is to use it primarily with Medicare, unless your practice knows otherwise. The other add-on that's worth mentioning is the prolonged service add-on, which is more rare. If your total time exceeds the 54 minutes covered by 99215, you can add a prolonged service code to represent that additional time. This usually applies in crisis level or unusually complex visits, not routine care. Okay, two quick sidebars before closing: intakes and telehealth. So far, I've been talking mostly about follow-ups, and everything that we've discussed here applies similarly across disciplines. Initial visits are going to be a little bit different depending on your practice setting. Mental health providers, so psychiatrists, psych MPs, etc., often bill a 90792 for a comprehensive psychiatric intake, whereas PCPs, even when the visit is mental health focused, are going to use standard new or established E&M codes under the same MDM or time-based framework that we've discussed. As for telehealth, especially for mental health-focused visits, the billing framework is generally the same as for in-person care, so that makes that transition easy. Now, the last thing I want to discuss before closing really applies more to mental health-specific clinicians, so psych MPs, PAs, psychiatrists, etc., rather than PCPs, and that is psychotherapy add-on codes. When you're performing a structured therapy in your sessions with patients, these codes are incredibly valid and important to include. The structured therapy part, though, is important. CPT doesn't consider an overall therapeutic frame or vague supportive psychotherapy to meet the cut. You have to document the therapy type, the goals, the duration, and the content separately from the E&M work. But if you are doing that, the psychotherapy add-on codes can be helpful in those cases. They're time-based primarily, with a 90833 representing 16 to 37 minutes of therapy, 90836 representing 38 to 52 minutes, and 90838 being anything above 52 minutes. The catch here is that this time has to be spent explicitly separate from the E&M time. So if you spend 20 minutes on symptom review and med discussion for an E&M code of 99213 or 99214, and then perform 20 minutes of clearly defined therapy, a 90833 can be appropriate. In practice, many visits end up being a blend of medication management and therapeutic conversation, and it becomes difficult sometimes to cleanly separate psychotherapy time from E&M time. In those cases, time-based E&M billing is often the cleaner, safer, and more accurate approach. And you're not undervaluing your work by doing this. Counseling, reflection, and motivational interviewing are all explicitly included in E&M. Psychotherapy add-on codes are appropriate when you're intentionally providing structured therapy with clearly documented time and focus, and there's less focus on the E&M. Okay, so to wrap up, the key takeaway here is that mental health care is real medical work, and the current billing framework is actually designed to recognize that if you know how to use it. Whether you're billing based on medical decision-making or time, the goal isn't to optimize revenue, but to accurately reflect the cognitive load, risk, and time that mental health care requires. MDM often captures the complexity of shorter, higher-risk visits, while time-based billing provides a straightforward and defensible option for longer, counseling-heavy encounters. Add-on codes can play a role in specific situations, but for most clinicians, confidence in MDM and time-based billing will go a long way towards reducing anxiety, underbilling, and burnout, and help you stop second-guessing whether your work actually counts. Because it does. All right, that's it for today's episode. Thanks for listening, as always. You can find a link to the episode page in the podcast description, which will take you to a brief summary of the episode, as well as some downloadable companion resources. For more episodes, check out collaborative-psychiatry.org/quicktakes. If you're interested in more structured, in-depth learning and frameworks, Collaborative Psychiatry offers full-length CME-accredited audio courses designed around practical mental health decision-making, along with downloadable clinical tools and course workspaces to help you answer questions when they come up in clinic. If this episode was useful, please consider sharing it with a colleague or leaving a review in your podcast app. It really helps more clinicians find the show. And now, the disclaimer. This podcast is intended for general educational purposes only. It does not constitute medical advice, the practice of medicine, or the establishment of a professional relationship. The use of any of this information in clinical practice is at your own discretion and risk. Thanks again, and see you next time.